This CKNW podcast is brought to you by Destination Toyota in Burnaby. Open all the time at burnabytoyota.ca.
Hey, and welcome to the show. It's good to have you here today. This coming week, so next weekend, I'm going to be down in the San Francisco area test driving the all-new Ford Escape. And those that are regular listeners know it's one of the best sellers in the country. It's a big deal. And here's a little background on the Canadian car market. As fuel prices have started to go up over the last year, Canadians are rethinking the size of their vehicle. The fastest growing segment in Canada is the compact crossover. Historically, and actually still is, the biggest segment is compact cars. These are vehicles like the Honda Civic, the Toyota Corolla, the Mazda 3. They've always been best sellers in the country, but now people are looking for something that gives them a little bit more utility. They can sit off the ground, they're easier to get in and out of, and they often come with the all-wheel drive capability that Canadians like because, hey, it snows. So if you're looking for something that's a little bit bigger, a lot of people are turning towards the compact crossover. So they give up a little bit in terms of fuel economy, but you get a lot in terms of practicality, and that's why they're growing so quickly. So Canadians love their compact cars and their compact crossovers. In the United States, it tends to be one size bigger. Americans love mid-size cars, and they love mid-size SUVs. So they tend to be a little bit supersized. We're going to open the phones today, and if you want to talk about anything automotive, you're more than welcome at 1-877-399-9898 and 604-280-9898. Back to my original thought. So this week, off to San Francisco, be test driving the new Ford Escape. I'll have an interview for you about the new vehicle. I'll get to test drive it. I'll give you my opinion on the vehicle when I come back next week. Also, the week after that, Dodge has the Dart that they're launching, and this is the compact car for Dodge. It's built on an Alfa Romeo platform. It has several different engine choices, and it's going to hopefully be a pretty good performer. So that's one that's very interesting. And here are some cars that are coming. The reason I bring this up is because whenever a new model is arriving, the older model usually is discounted. And you might have heard my interviews with Rick Balkin from newcarselloff.com. His website is a place where dealers put inventory that they have to move out because new models are coming in. For example, if you're in the market for a compact crossover, the all-new Escape is coming in the next little while. So the current Escape, they've got to get rid of. Those are going to be discounted heavily. And we talked about that last week on newcarselloff.com. Also, the Hyundai Santa Fe is coming this fall, late summer into the fall. So the current model will be discounted typically. And also another vehicle that's going to be eliminated from the Hyundai lineup will be the Veracruz. They're going to have a smaller Santa Fe and a bigger Santa Fe. Veracruz will go, so there's going to be deals on that. Right now, the Mazda CX-5 has just arrived. It's the brand new crossover from Mazda. And the CX-7 is going to be phased out. So those vehicles will probably be discounted. The brand new CR-V has been here since January, early February, and the 2011, some of them are still sitting on dealers' lots. And these are vehicles that are still brand new. There's nothing wrong with them. They were perfectly good when they were brand new last year. It's just that there's a new model, a brand new version of that vehicle out. In the case of the CX-5, it's an all-new car, and the dealers have to move this inventory. So that's when you get a great deal. In the car side of things, Nissan has a new Altima coming out very shortly, so current Altimas will be on sale. Toyota came out with a Camry late last fall. There might still be some 2011 sitting around. Still to come this year, the Chevy Malibu is coming, so that means the current model will be discounted before it goes. Same thing for the Taurus and the Fusion. The Fusion is the best-selling midsize car in Canada. They've got an all-new model coming this year, so when you start to see those discounts, they're going to be on the existing 2012 models before the 13 arrives. It goes on and on and on. The one thing I always say to people about what I do is, I'm so busy, I'm going here, I'm going there, because the car business never stops. There's always new model releases. In the old days, the new models used to come in the fall. So, you would say in the fall of 2012, the 2013s are arriving. But new model introductions are happening right around the calendar, and that means that there's always deals to be had. Excuse me. You have to decide for yourself if you're somebody that wants the newest and the latest, or if you're fine with getting a vehicle that is the last of its breed, but you get a good deal on it. Anything you want to talk about, 1-877-399-9898 and 604-280-9898. We go to Gary. Hey, Gary, go ahead.
Oh, hey, Zach. How you doing? The question I have is about posted kilometers. When the manufacturer's listed on their sheets, is there a realistic website or something where we can get some realistic?
Yeah, it's called Fantasyland. It's called Fantasyland.
Yeah, yeah, because we're really disappointed. A couple years ago, we got a 2.09 CRV, and it was just a slug on gas.
Mm-hmm. I've talked about this in the past. This is you're tapping into one of my pet peeves.
Uh-huh.
And I've brought this up with many of the car manufacturers. When I go on these trips to test drive these cars, I say to the manufacturers, you've got to put pressure on the government. It's not the manufacturers that do these tests, right? It's the government implements the test standard, and then the test is executed, and that's how they come up with the number, right? I'm just going to put you on hold. I'm getting a little interference. I'll come back to you in a second, okay? Hang on a second, Gary. Yeah, so what happens is that they do the test, and they get the number for the fuel consumption. But this is all done in a lab, and it's really a short test, and it's very simple, and it really doesn't reflect real-world driving. What they have in the United States, they instead of a two-cycle test, in Canada we have the city and the highway. In the United States, they have a five-cycle test. They do city, they do highway, they do cold start, they do air conditioning on, and they also do hills. Well, when you add all of those together, that's more realistic. That's the way people drive their car. Cars are cold in the morning, they use more fuel. Going up a hill, you use more fuel. Putting the air conditioning on, you use more fuel. So they have a much better test. I've heard from one of the manufacturers that the Canadian government is going to be morphing towards more of the American model. So, Gary, I'm going to say to you, the website to go to is in the United States. Just look up, just go to Google or whatever you use and type in U.S. fuel economy numbers, okay? And you'll get the EPA website. This gives you the American numbers for the particular car that you're looking at. What you need to do at that point is then convert it back to liters per 100 kilometers. Now, always keep in mind that the American gallon is different than the imperial gallon, right? It's smaller. So you have to do a quick calculation there, changing it from U.S. gallons to liters per 100 kilometers. And there are websites out there. If you just put in, metric conversion, you'll find a table and it'll do it for you. But that's the best way to do it because the Canadian numbers, I think, are a con. I think the Canadians are getting ripped off by the government by putting these numbers out. And I have heard from people that say, well, I'm able to get the numbers that were posted. Yeah, because you drive like you're 100 years old. You never go above 50 kilometers an hour, and you end up being a hazard on the road. So you're able to do it, but it really isn't a realistic driving style that you and I would ever, utilize, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, and the only vehicles, in my opinion, that are getting close to these numbers, and the ones that I drive, 80 to 100 different cars a year, are diesels.
Okay.
Those are the only ones I find that are getting close.
Okay, well, that's great. I appreciate all your help now. Thank you very
much. Okay, thanks a lot, John. We're going to go next to, that was Gary. This is John. Hey, John, go ahead.
Hi there. How you doing?
I'm awesome.
I nailed it down to three on the 2012. I'd like to have your input. The Hyundai Tucson, the Kia Sportage, and the Honda CR-V.
I want to throw one more into the mix.
Oh, okay.
The Mazda CX-5.
Oh, okay.
It's a brand new model that just came out, and spinning off what the last caller was talking about, fuel efficiency, I think that the all four of these vehicles are right at the top of the class in terms of fuel efficiency. Now, granted, you're not going to get the posted numbers. As I said, that's something that's really not realistic. In everyday driving, you're not going to get those numbers, but you can do a comparison on what the numbers are, and it'll be sort of a percentage of that. So those are four excellent choices in the last few years. The Tucson has been top of my list, which is the basic same vehicle as the Kia with different styling. The engine, the transmission, the platform are the same. Okay, so look at the Tucson and the Kia as very similar, except for the way they style and the way they fit them. The CR-V will be the largest of that group, with a great new interior, lots of features, and I think might just be the best all-rounder. And then you add in the new Mazda CX-5, and it has a lot of great attributes. Nicely finished interior, good-looking vehicle, a little bit smaller. It might be the most efficient of the bunch because it's got this new technology that Mazda calls SkyActiv with a high-compression engine. So those four are really good choices.
So you can't really go too wrong.
No.
On the
no, on either of them. Then it all comes down. Here's what they call it in the business is the funnel, right? So you've got four cars in the funnel. And then you and the funnel gets smaller as you get to the bottom. So you're going to go and test drive the four, hopefully. Don't just look at them on the website and look, you know, at newspaper ads. Actually go put your backside in the cars and drive them. Because if something isn't right, if you don't fit physically or you have a hard time getting in or out, or if you play hockey and your hockey bag won't fit in the back, discount that one off your list, because that is never going to change, right? That's always going to be, or if there's something about the interior, like where the radio switch is or looking, backing up, those sorts of things will never change. So it has to actually work for your needs. So that's where you sort of take a few out of the funnel. Now the funnel is a little bit smaller at the bottom. Then you get down to one or two as you like both of them. And then typically what happens in the buying cycle is who's got the deal? Is it 0% financing? Is it, you know, free gas for a year or whatever they've got up for their marketing at that time? And typically that's when people choose one over the other when it comes down to the financing, because that's when you typically save the most money. Is it who's got the best offer on the table?
Yeah, I see the warranties on the Tucson and Sportage seem to be the highest.
Yes, and
that's
what
100,000.
That's right. Mitsubishi has the same thing, and they do, and that's one thing that they have. So they've taken money. This is the way car manufacturers look at this. Okay, I'm going to take money, and I'm going to put it into warranty coverage, or I'm going to take money and I'm going to put it into 0% financing. You know, the Korean companies have been very aggressive at doing both 0% financing, 100,000 kilometer warranty, and more features. And that's why they're some of the fastest growing companies, Hyundai and Kia, because they do all of it.
Yes.
Okay. So you've got four great choices there. So now your job is to go and drive them all. Discount the ones that don't work for you. Get the funnel smaller at the bottom, and then you're going to get down to one or two and decide which one you want parked in your driveway.
Thanks very much.
Anytime, John. Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. We've got Bryce, Jimmy, Henry on the phone. The numbers are 1-877-399-9898 and 604-280-9898. We're going to take a break, come back, and we'll speak to Mark Bergevin from Odessa, and then take more of your calls on driving. Mark Bergevin joins us from Odessa Public Auction, where they sell cars in literally seconds. We have another good news story. What's this one about?
This is a 2006 Ford F-150. Gentleman brought us the vehicle. He owned a painting business, and he needed to upgrade the vehicle. So he'd gone, purchased a new vehicle, and needed to get this one addressed as he needed to get some cash flow. So brought us the vehicle, consigned it for $4,600, and we sold it $4,800. So fantastic. He took the cash, guaranteed funds, and off he went following day.
So when a vehicle comes into the auction and you have no idea what the value is, you go, and I get a lot of calls here, people saying, what's my car worth? What do you do to get a rough estimate? You go into your database, I'm guessing.
Yeah, we checked the database, Zach, of all the vehicles that we've sold in the past 95 days or so, and just do a comparison and see, you know, chances are, because we sell thousands of vehicles throughout Canada, that we'll have sold something along the same lines as the vehicle that you have.
So he knew going in that it was going to be worth about $4,500, right?
Yeah, we gave him the appraisal of $4,500. Again, he placed a reserve within the ballpark at $46, and then, you know, because it's maybe a little bit cleaner than the ones we've sold in the past for those numbers, he gets a few hundred dollars more at $4,800. So fantastic for him.
Thanks a lot, Mark. That's Mark Bergevin from Odessa Richmond Public Auction. You can find them two ways. You can go to their website directly. If it's easy to remember, you can go to motormouth.ca, and you'll see their banner ad at the very top of the screen. All right, back to the phone board, and we say hello to Henry. Go ahead, Henry. Henry, are you there? Henry's chatting with somebody over coffee, I think. So we'll go back to Henry. Maybe you can let him know we're going to go to him in a second. We go to Bryce. Hey, Bryce.
Hey, Bryce. How's it going, Zach?
Good.
Sorry.
That's okay. I know what you meant.
Yeah. Hey, I'm looking at a new 2012 Dodge Ram with a Hemi.
Yep.
And it's got that new MDS system on it. How good is it?
Oh, it's not new. It's actually been around for a long time, and that was developed by Mercedes-Benz. You might remember that Daimler-Chrysler, about 10 years ago, they got married and then had a bad divorce.
But one of the
things that they got in the settlement was some technology. The engine is called, it used to be called cylinder deactivation, or it's engine management. What happens, you've got eight cylinders chugging away, but when you're in light load, you know, when you're cruising along the highway and you might be coming down a slope, and the engine really isn't working that hard. It switches off four of the cylinders. So you effectively have a four-cylinder there. And then as soon as the computer senses that there needs to be more power and there's more load required, all four come back on. It's been around for at least 10 years. It works beautifully. Honda uses it. You get a Honda Odyssey minivan. They go from six to three cylinders. It's good technology. It's been tried and proven, and you cannot tell when it goes back and forth. It's very well done.
Yeah, I've got an 04 right now type thing, which doesn't have it even started.
Just hang on a second, Bryce. Hold your phone up to your mouth a bit better there.
Yeah, sorry.
There you go.
No, I've got an 04 right now. I'm just wondering, what do you figure the fuel consumption difference would be?
They claim it's up to 15%.
Yeah.
But it really comes down to, here's the analogy I use. If you're always putting pressure on the pedal and you're accelerating, then the computer says, I need more power, right? So it's going to open up all eight cylinders. So if you're an efficient kind of driver, and one way to drive and to think about this is pulsing. So you accelerate, and then you lift off the throttle, and then you ease on the throttle lightly. So you're switching off half of the cylinders, and you might be able to go a little bit long with just four cylinders running. Now, this is all really comes down to your style. If you're somebody that's aggressive on and off the throttle all the time, the system will not activate that much. But if you're very smooth with the throttle, the system will activate a lot. Do you understand what I mean? Yeah, so that's basically the way you want to go into it. Here's something new, though. I was just at the New York Auto Show last week, or a week and a half ago maybe now, and they have a new Ram that's coming out. It's a six-cylinder. It's going to have 306 horsepower, lots of torque, and an 8-speed automatic. And that's going to get you more efficiency. Dodge, or Ram now, claims that it's going to have the most power and the greatest efficiency of any six-cylinder truck. Do you need an 8-cylinder?
Not really. Unfortunately, I've already ordered the 8-cylinder.
Well, I mean, you don't really own the car until you take it off the lot. You know that,
yeah.
Right? But,
yeah.
I mean, in goodwill, you should follow through with the transaction. But I don't think that, where are you calling from, Alberta? Getting rid of a Hemi Ram pickup truck in Alberta is going to be hard to do. So it's up to you. And this is going to be the 13 model.
Okay.
So that's something to consider. So maybe do a little bit more reading. Actually, if you go to my website, motormouth.ca, you'll see a picture of the Dodge Viper on the main page there. Click on that. It goes through all the different products that were unveiled at the New York Auto Show, and in there is a little story about the Ram.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, anytime.
Thanks.
All right. If you want to get in touch with the show today, we're doing open phones. The numbers are 1-877-399-9898 and 604-280-9898. And as I talk about my website, you're more than welcome to go on there anytime. Motormouth.ca, you'll find interviews, you'll find old radio shows, articles. You'll also find videos. I've just put up a video there of the new 911 at the track, which was a lot of fun. It was wet, but it was fun. So motormouth.ca is a good resource if you want to get in touch with me as well. Continue taking your calls when we come back next on Driving. Hey, welcome back to the show, and we go back to the phone board. We are doing open phones for the rest of the show. If you want to call, 1-877-399-9898 and 604-280-9898. Henry's next. Hey, Henry, go ahead.
Yeah, Jack, I'm in the market for brand new, Subaru all-wheel drive or something comparable to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's about $27,000, I guess. I'd like to spend about, close to that or less.
And what's your question about the Subaru?
Are they any good? The engine, 2-liter, I guess that's a new model with continuous transmission. Are they any good? Any troubles with those?
I'll just say right off the bat, if you go to my website, motormouth.ca, and you go on the video section and you just look up Subaru, you'll see a video I did there interviewing Ted Lulka from Subaru Canada talking about the new Impreza. The Impreza just came out late in the fall. It's a bigger car. What I like about it, particularly the updates they've done to it, the doors open really quite wide. It's very easy to get in and out of big doors. You get the hatchback or the trunk with the sedan. They've improved the dash. It's now got a soft touch dash. It's a bigger car than the old model. It's got a new engine that is actually more powerful. I would say it's quicker than the older model, but it uses less fuel. The biggest change is the continuously variable transmission that you touched on. It's a pretty good one. The only thing is, you know, you have to drive it and see if you notice any difference from any other car that you've driven, because there is a slightly different drive and feel to having a continuously variable transmission. I'm not saying it's bad or good. It's just something you need to try out and see if you like it, then great. There are not a lot of compact cars with all-wheel drive, and that's where Subaru really has an advantage. They charge a slight premium for their cars. They're not as, you know, inexpensive as others, but they have fabulous resale. The one thing about Subarus is that when you go to sell that car 4 or 5 years down the road, there's always somebody that wants a good used Subaru. So they hold their value. You pay a little bit more when you buy it, but you get a lot of that back when you go to sell it. So it is a very good car. In the compact market, I mean, Suzuki has the SX4, which is available with all-wheel drive. You can get the, you know, the hatchback, like the Jeep Compass, which is a compact with all-wheel drive. I'm sure I'm missing one. But the Subaru really has a unique advantage in that they do offer an all-wheel drive compact car. And if you want something a little bit bigger, then you can look at the not just the Impreza, but you can go up into, like, the Forester, which is a little bit bigger, but more money.
Yeah, I think I'm going to something small and go to gas mileage. And I'm worried about their transmission. I don't know if they, how long reliable or not.
You know, here's an interesting story. We were just in New York City, and my camera guy told me this story. This is sort of secondhand, but it's an interesting story nonetheless. He has a Nissan Altima. Okay, and the Altima has a continuously variable transmission, and he said to them, how many miles are on this car? And he said, I've got 500,000 miles, not kilometers, miles, driving stop and go in city traffic in New York City. And he says, what's happened with this car? Engine, transmission? He says, nope, all I've done is maintenance on it. Now, they change their oil like every week, which is, you know, what they need to do. But that's sort of a testament to continuously variable transmissions. There have been other stories that say they're not as reliable. So, you know, I think it's the same system, the same transmission that Audi used for a while. It doesn't have a belt-driven system. It's a chain-driven system, which is what makes their transmission a little bit unique.
Okay. And what about the new four-cylinder engine? I guess that's the upgrade too, right?
Yeah, so it's going to use less fuel, but apparently, when I drove it, listen, hey, the proof is in the pudding, as they say. Go and drive the car. I drove the car. I thought it was fine. I thought the motor was great, and that's what we're starting to see now. They can get more power and more efficiency out of a smaller engine, but the drivability is just as good because often the cars are lighter than the ones they replaced. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Anytime. All right, we're going to go next to Blair. Hey, Blair, go ahead.
Good morning, Zach. I have a 10-year-old Chev Suburban with a 5.3-liter motor in it. Every morning when I start it up, for about the first 60 seconds, it either pings or rattles or something like that, and then it goes away. And I thought, well, it's just my vehicle. But I found out that other people with Suburbans of that era have the same thing. What's wrong?
Has it always done this?
I've only owned it for a year, and yes, it's always done it.
Well, on startup, you know that there's a richer fuel cycle, right? So they put more fuel in to warm the engine up. Then there's two things fighting against each other here. You've got one where they want to warm the engine up, and they use that by putting more fuel in. The old days, remember, you put the choke on the car?
Right.
But they also have to heat up the catalytic converter. That's the system that cleans out the pollution from, or as much as they can, from the tailpipe emissions. So they have to heat that up as quickly as they can because they only work when they're hot. I would suspect that what's happening with your vehicle is in the heat-up cycle. Once the choke comes off and the engine leans down, then the knocking goes away. I would, next time you're in getting an oil change, not, you know, one of those quickie lube places, but go somewhere where there's a technician that can, you know, check the vehicle out. It could be an oxygen sensor, a flow sensor, something like that. It's worth asking the question. If you go online and you see lots of other people with this engine that have this problem, but that doesn't really affect the vehicle long term, then I guess you just live with the knocking.
Okay, very good, because my dealer says, of course, he's never heard of it before in his life.
Of course not. But the other thing you might want to try, just for one tank of fuel, is you go up one grade of gas to a mid-grade gas, because knocking, you know, obviously is something that is, you know, they get around that by putting more octane in, right?
Right.
But if it's only happening for 60 seconds while the vehicle's in its warm-up cycle, then you know, and I'm not saying that the vehicle is fully warmed after a minute, but what they want to do is heat up the engine and the catalytic converter as quickly as they can. And that's what you're probably getting at that point.
Well, that's the best explanation I've ever heard. Thank you very
much. Okay, Blair, anytime. Okay, another call from Tom. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Hi. It just seems criminal that even some vehicles that are made in Canada and they're shipped to the States and the dealers sell them new are less money than in Canada. And I can't believe how some manufacturers will not allow you to bring the vehicle back into Canada if you buy it in the States. They say there's no warranty. And it's just criminal to do that. Like, when you buy the vehicle, it has a warranty. I don't know how they can cancel it on you.
Yeah, it's a really sort of slippery slope when you get into this. I think that the whole, whatever happened to the free trade agreement, you know? I can go down to the United States and buy a stereo for my house or a TV and bring it across the border. I go to the border and I say, I'm buying a Samsung TV. I pay the tax or duty and I take it home.
Right.
But you can't go down to a dealership and buy a car and drive it home. So these big corporations, in my opinion, this is my opinion, are in collusion, right? So
absolutely.
You've got the American arm and the Canadian arm working together to make sure that Canadians don't buy these vehicles. The one thing you've got to remember, though, that the warranty is given out by that division of that company. See, these are often separate companies. You've got to remember that. Like, for example, the Toyota Motor Corporation has a Canadian subsidiary. It's not even a wholly owned subsidiary that they buy the cars from Toyota and then they sell them. They're the ones that are providing the warranty. Same thing in the United States. So it's got the badge on the front that says whether it's a Honda, Toyota, Ford, or BMW, but often they're separate companies that have sold the car, and that is the company that is providing the warranty. Here's the slippery thing I don't understand. You go down to the United States, or for example, an American drives a car like a Honda because the Honda warranty is not honored in Canada, a U.S. warranty. An American drives, say, from Buffalo to Toronto, and their car breaks down. They take it to the Honda dealer in Toronto. It's fixed under warranty, right?
Okay.
But a Canadian that buys a car and brings it back, it's not covered under warranty because it's a registered in Canadian car.
Really, it's a big fraud because what you've done is you're discriminating against a certain individual. So in the case, if you live in Canada, you're discriminated against. And even the dealers here, I can appreciate their position, but they lie. They say, oh, there's no warranty. And some vehicles like the Honda, and the Acura, and the Dodge, you know, they don't have any warranty when you bring them in from the States.
No, they don't. And they're upfront about that. And then there's other companies that say, yes, we will honor the warranty. But when you call to make an appointment, they say, how does November sound?
Yes.
You know, they put you on the never, never plan.
Well, even Ford are trying to, you know, the dealer's extorting $500 to bring it in.
My brother, for example, has a he has a van. I'm not going to say which brand it is, but it's a Japanese van. He bought it in the States. He brought it to Canada. Now, this car apparently has a warranty that will be honored in Canada. He took it in for a well-known problem with the product, and it needed some fixing. They give him the runaround. They put him on the Never Never plan, and they're never going to get to it. And they told him, well, we don't know what it is. We're not sure how we're going to get paid. We don't know how to put an American warranty in from a Canadian side and blah, 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 blah. But it's supposed to be covered.
Yeah.
He said, forget it. He drove to Buffalo. He lives in Toronto.
Yes.
Drove to Buffalo, dropped it off at the dealer. They gave him a courtesy car. He went shopping, cross-border shopping for the day, came back. The car was fixed. He said they couldn't have been nicer. They cleaned the car. They washed it. They gave him the best service possible, and he drove home, and that's the way he dealt with it.
Wow.
Now, so this is the thing. You know, you've got this whole thing where you've got one arm of the company won't sell a Canadian a car. You go across the border, brand-new dealership. You go in, I want to buy the brand-new car. Where are you from? Oh, I'm from Canada. Yeah, sorry, we can't sell it to you. Why? It's totally antitrust. It's against the free trade. There's court cases that are trying to go through the system now to say that it's not legal. But, you know, the only way that you can get around it is to buy a used car. It's the best way to do it. And the good thing about the United States with a market of 300 million people is there's often cars that are 6-7 months old that get traded in or for whatever reason that you can pick up, and those vehicles will be able to be brought into the country and you can buy them from a dealer, and often the warranty will be honored.
Right.
Okay.
Would you consider doing this, going across Canada and registering dealers that aren't big fraudsters so that you'd put the sticker on the window so when people walk in they know that they adhere to a code of ethics? Because these guys are, you know, I'm from Calgary and these guys are the worst swindlers.
Well, it's got nothing to do with the dealer. The dealer is just trying to do business in his market. He doesn't want you to go outside of his market to buy a car. The good dealers are the smart ones that will do the work on the car and help you out, because they know when, you know, in the future when the prices, and here's the good news, prices in Canada are leveling off. If you look at the, you know, the entry-level cars, the $15,000 to $30,000 range, the prices are very close. When you get into the luxury vehicles, the bigger, higher-end ticket items, there's a big discrepancy still. The Acura MDX is one that was about $10,000 off, and it's made in Ontario.
Right.
So that's one, and there you go. But the prices are starting to level off because we've now had Canadian parity pricing-wise with our dollar in the United States for a longer period of time. So the car companies, I go to these car launches all the time. The cars usually have more content, more features, and they're usually less expensive than the one they replaced. So the prices are evening out.
Right.
Okay?
Great show.
Okay, Tom.
Thanks.
Anytime. Quick break. We're going to take more calls towards the end of the show. Here's the thing. We always get way too many people on the end of the show. I need you people to call at the beginning of the show. But that's just a rant for another day. Back next with Rick Balkin from New Car Sell-Off next. And welcome back to the show each and every week. Rick Balkin from NewCarSellOff.com joins us. He's the founder of this new website that's only been up and running for just over a month. Now, Rick, we've talked in the past about what the site does, deeply discounted cars that dealers are trying to, you know, get off of their lot. What problems does this solve for the consumer?
Well, we want one spot, Zach, that the average buyer can go to that isn't an expert negotiator, that's able to find a car or a truck that they've been looking for that's been already discounted. Most times when you walk into a car dealership, you'll see cars and trucks posted retail. It doesn't obviously help if you're not a great negotiator to buy this vehicle. And from the dealer's point of view, typically they don't have an opportunity to get out to the car lot and sometimes discount the cars as much as they want to. So what we've asked the dealers to do, if they want to post them on our site, is to actually post their very, very best price that they're able to take for the car. And then at that point, we'll spot audit on an ongoing basis to make sure that these vehicles are, in fact, as good as they should be, and provide a place for you, the consumer, to come to buy a vehicle that's been greatly discounted.
So newcarselloff.com, the advantage is you go on there and the price is already discounted. Do you think there's any room for negotiating above and beyond the price that's there maybe?
Well, you know, Zach, I'll tell you, they've been very aggressive in most cases. So if you're going to get any negotiating room out of these dealerships, there's going to be very, very little. Like, I talk hundreds, not thousands, when you go into the dealership. And even then, I'd be surprised if you get much more than that, other than maybe a free tank of gas or a set of extra floor mats or something. But these prices are aggressive.
Yeah, so that basically tells you that these are rock-bottom prices. And the dealers are moving these. Why? Like, why would they do this if they could get somebody to come in who isn't a good negotiator? What's the incentive for them?
Well, there's a lot of cars and trucks that, for whatever reason, don't move. And these guys are very motivated to get them out of their inventory. They cost them money to stay in their inventory in terms of interest charges they incur every day that they're sitting there. So they just want them off their books. There's nothing wrong with these cars whatsoever. They just, for whatever reason, haven't sold. You know, I was at a dealership this week talking to a dealer that had been under construction. And he has 10 or 15 vehicles that he's posted with us that he said, Rick, I need them off. I don't have room to park them. I'm under construction. I need them off of our lot. And as a result of things, he's posted them up on our site, and they're really, really good deals.
So that's when you benefit.
You benefit hugely by somebody else's misfortune, unfortunately, in this world. And that's kind of where we're at with this. These vehicles have been posted because these guys have to move them.
NewCarSellOff.com is the website. You can go directly there. If you go to my website, motormouth.ca, the banner is right at the very top. You can click on that. Thanks a lot, Rick. Speak to you next week.
Thanks, Zach.
And right back to the phone board we go, and we say hello to Keith. Hey, Keith, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, Zach. Yeah, my question is I'm considering buying a used Porsche.
Yeah.
And I know you have a Porsche.
I got two of them.
You got two of them.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm an addict.
Yeah, right. Two Porsches. Good grief. Anyway, I was wondering what models are the best bang for the buck.
Okay, are you looking for the SUV, the car,
the
sports car?
Either a Boxster or 911.
Oh, well, the best value, without question, is the Boxster, in my opinion, because you get two trunks, you get all that Porsche goodness, and you get a convertible thrown in, right? So you get the roof down. And a lot of people discount the Boxster and the Cayman because they're the less expensive Porsches. But in my opinion, they're all still Porsches. And the whole thing is the snob factor of having a 911 is a bit overdone. If you can afford to buy, are you looking at a used car?
Yes.
Yeah, a really nice used Porsche Boxster S. The S model has a little bit more power. And I was just at my mechanics, actually, talking to him about used Porsches. And he said, you know, the Boxster S, if you, you know, make sure it's been well-maintained and looked after, he said they're bulletproof. They're great cars.
They are, okay.
Yeah, yeah, Porsche, here's the other thing a lot of people don't realize. Of all car brands, we're talking everybody, Mercedes, Lexus, everybody, Porsche is right at the very top in terms of quality.
Right.
Okay, so they make excellent products.
Okay, and what years would, I know it depends on the money.
The newer the years, you're going to get more power. They did make updates through the car. I think it was 05 or 06. Yeah. I'm trying to remember the year. They came out with more horsepower. That's why I say if you can afford the Boxster S, you get a bit more grunt with the motor, and it makes it a little bit more of that, you know, Porsche feel, a sort of real sports car. You can get the manual or you can get the automatic. I'm not sure which one you want. Make sure you get it inspected. Do your research. And have at it. Have some fun. They're great cars.
Excellent. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Bye-bye. Anytime. All right. We're going to go to we'll go to Jim. Hey, Jim, go ahead.
Good morning,
Zach. Got about a minute, so have at it.
Good morning, Zach. I'm driving a 2001 Honda CR-V.
Mm-hmm.
It has an overdrive transmission, which I leave it in all the time.
Yep.
It growls. Now, I spoke to someone.
What growls, the engine or the transmission?
Well, the curious thing is, once I take it out of overdrive,
mm-hmm.
the growling stops.
It could just be resonant vibration at the frequency of the drive shaft spinning and the way the motor is turning. It could just be vibration. It could be exhaust vibrating. It could be any number of things. So with a car that's, you know, 11 years old now, you really got to go and get that. Is it sound like a bad noise?
No. Well, here's the curious thing. If I accelerate gently, you don't hear any noise. If I push it a little too hard, it begins to growl.
Mm.
And somebody told me.
Maybe it's hungry.
I beg your pardon?
Maybe it's hungry. Go ahead.
Change the oil in the differential, which I did.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't make any difference at all. Then somebody said, well, it could be the heat shield over the catalytic converter.
Yeah, it just could be something rattling in there. You know what, Jim, I diagnosing something over the phone. I didn't mean to hang up on you there, Jim. I meant to put you on hold. I apologize. Diagnosing it over the phone. There's some good guesses there from your friends. I think it is some kind of vibration. But you really need to go to a technician or a mechanic or back to the Honda dealer and get them to look at it, and they should be able to figure that out. All out of time. That's it for this week. I'm Zach Spencer. Speak to you next week on Driving.